When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Board Gamers Anonymous, a podcast about gamers and the insane fun we have at the table together. This is Anthony.
This is Chris.
And this is Drew.
Alrighty. Welcome to the episode number 30.
Woohoo!
Daniel can't make it this week. He is out of town, unfortunately, for work. But he's here in spirit, and we'll argue on his behalf.
Alright.
Anything without good rules and too many wonky situations, Daniel will automatically hate. We'll just assume.
Okay.
But this week we have a special episode. But first things first, of course, we just want to remind you guys that we are on Twitter at BGA Podcast. We are on Facebook. Look for Board Gamers Anonymous. We are on Board Game Geek. You can just search for the Board Gamers Anonymous Guild. And we have our own website, BoardGamersAnonymous.com. Lots of awesome stuff on there. Plenty of articles, reviews, coverage of Kickstarter stuff. Lots of fun little things going on there. Plus a brand new design that we just put up in the last few weeks.
Yeah.
So that's awesome. Look. And we definitely want you to stop by and check it out. Comment. Give us your favorite games. Argue with us. We have fun with that. All right. Before we dive into the podcast proper, I just want to touch back a couple episodes ago. Episode 28, we reviewed Lewis and Clark. Couple people on Board Game Geek were discussing our comments about Sacagawea and noted a couple rules that we might have messed up a little bit. So I just wanted to point out that we saw your comments. We've taken a look. We're going to get it back to the table. We'll run through it. I'm going to hold by my review. I think it's still, you know, I don't think anything changes based on that, but it's the kind of thing you don't want to mess up in a review is the rules. So
sometimes we learn more from you guys than you learn from us.
And worst case scenario, getting the rules wrong just makes it a variant. So
yeah,
it's not so bad. It's just the Board Gamers Anonymous variant.
It's not wrong. Yeah. It's different.
And honestly, it's great that you guys picked up on this because it helps us play better and helps us get the word out to the community. And any time that we have to bring a game back onto the table is awesome because that's a great job.
Yeah, totally. And I get to thank Daniel for pointing out to everybody on Board Game Geek that I was essentially drugged when I read the rules to this. Thanks, bud. I don't like to fly, so if I'm going on a trip, expect some wonky rule reading. Fortunately, I got home before I read the rules to Myth. yeah, we'll get that one back out. I still enjoy it. Daniel's got my copy, but when he gets back, we're going to play.
All right, that sounds great. And in the future, check out our guild on Board Game Geek. We always love hearing from you.
Yeah, absolutely. So in other news, I know Drew had a couple things he noted.
Just some things I happened to see in the last couple days. Because I've been paying a lot of attention to Wizards of the Coast and their upcoming release of Dungeons & Dragons, the version 5, the retro version. They came out with an updated character sheet. It may seem like a small thing, but you know, if you're going to relaunch to the general public and try and get them involved, this is an important step. And they did retool the character sheet to make it more accessible, and in fact, to pull the game away from the old hack and slash. Okay, I have this armor and these weapons, and more toward creating characters, creating campaigns. We're going to have a link to it on our show notes. But you got to see this because it really gives you a chance to develop a character that you grow close to and like. And I think families and friends are going to enjoy playing this, hanging out together. I also came across something that I know Anthony's going to be interested in. Wild Miniatures? Word Miniatures. I don't know this company, but you do, I'm sure. W-Y-R-D. I always think of Wild. Word Miniatures is holding a painting contest. You know, I kept looking for when that is expiring, but we're going to have a link to that also, word-games.net. So everyone loves painting their miniatures. Everyone who loves miniatures loves painting their miniatures.
Careful with that statement.
I don't. I just dip mine in a bucket of paint, and that's it. That's painted.
Most people I know don't even like the fact that they're unpainted. So I get excited. I buy a game with unpainted miniatures for no reason other than I get to paint them.
Drew actually takes the Easter egg die and just
dip them in three colors. And that's it. Yeah. You know, no, I got to admit though, Robo Rally is really hard to play because all those little robot guys, they look all alike. Yes, I can see why painting them would make sense. Okay, valid point. And then there were two things in the news, literally in the news, that concerned board gamers, and I thought it'd be interesting for everyone to know, especially because, NPR, that bastion of common sense and good living, yesterday morning, from where we're sitting, June 25th, actually, Morning Edition, had a four-minute bit called Move Over Video Games, Board Games Aren't Dead Yet. Now, that comes on the heels of, I think you reported on a New York Times article.
Yes.
That was about how long ago? Just a couple weeks?
Just a couple weeks ago.
Yeah. So there is a renaissance, a resurgence here, if the New York Times and NPR and all these other groups are saying there's a resurgence. So we'll have a link to that for you can listen to it. But they also have the transcript available. And then I just today, earlier today, saw a YouTube video from The Verge. It's a tech vlog. And they did... one of their more recent ones was their top shelf series, Tabletop Gaming in the Digital Age. Again, showing the state of modern tabletop gaming through basically the first half was an interview with a couple people from Hasbro, and we think of them as old-fashioned, old-world gaming, but they're trying to keep up to date, not just on the tabletop, but digital too. And they also talked about a couple Kickstarter projects and how that's such a large part. So it's in the news, it's on the internet, tabletop gaming is becoming fashionable again, it's normal. Well, this The Verge was interesting. They showed this new, what's the game of it? Game of Phones. And they used that as an example of modern gaming. It was funded on Kickstarter, but it was a social gaming involving your phone. So it was on a tabletop, you draw a card... that would say, okay, look up something on the internet. So everybody would be on their cell phones looking it up, and then they would lay it on the table, and the judge would look at all their what they found and decide. So interesting way of tying in the modern social gaming.
Yeah, Steve Jackson Games is coming out with a hipster dice, nice. Which is literally one die,
yeah.
and supposedly the game is too cool for you. And the whole game is basically rolling the die. It shows an image of either, like, movies or books or things like that. And then you have to run to your phone and supposedly make up some sort of, like, oh, there's this great band. It's called so-and-so. And then someone has to either call you on it saying that you're lying. And if they do call you on it, you got to show on your phone that it's actually legitimate. But I think what we're seeing is, and especially in the millennial generation, is that... technology and texting and communication has gone so far to this very abrupt, just a few letters, you know, that now social gaming, tabletop gaming is coming back because we've so disconnected. Even the fact that we have these great technology where we can connect to everybody, we barely know anybody. We barely have these relationships. And as we know, because clearly we're gamer hipsters at this point, social gaming, tabletop gaming, lets you build these relationships. And, you know, and this is really what people need to kind of, engage with. Not that just kind of like, you know, you are in a bunch of consonants on a text or, you know, on a headset just yelling and screaming at somebody or some, you know, some pre-established statements that you could click on Hearthstone or something, but actually sitting down and engaging with people. So... turns out we're cool, I guess.
Pretty incredible the way they're tying
it. That's happening.
You know, in the bit about Hasbro, they got a little bit into this new My Monopoly thing that they're doing where people can personalize Monopoly set. And again, it's all done online, and it's all done through Google, and you pick streets near you, and you can print out the actual pieces to put on the board for your streets.
Very nice.
And you can print out pictures from Google Maps,
really?
I guess. And... Yeah, so tabletop and social media, they're all coming together.
And that's that other part, too, where this generation and is really used to getting things individualized for them. You know, you have your own phone, you have your own Twitter account, you have your own YouTube channel. So why not have your own game? It should be based upon you, not just some old 1910s, you know, commerce, capitalism society. I want my street. And now you can have your street because there are satellites and they're watching us.
Yeah, it creeps me out a lot.
No, I don't think I like that. Think of this. I can envision Flashpoint, where instead of a generic, you know, house and neighborhood, you can have your neighborhood, your house transposed, and you can set your house on fire.
I don't have a problem with that. My problem is if somebody else has a copy of my house that they're playing fire with, or Monopoly in my neighborhood. I don't know if I like that.
If Anthony's going to burn down his house, he wants to make sure it's in his game, not somebody else's But we're also looking at 3D printers at some point you know, commercial grade and affordable, so you could print out miniatures that match you and your family and friends.
I was at Coney Island. They have their little sideshow museum thing there in Coney Island, and they had a 3D printer there, and they would print out a likeness of you, a little...
Sure.
And you could do that. We could all have little miniatures made of us that we could use in our own games.
Don't like it. What's the point? Like, the point is to, like, to escape your life and get into this fantasy world, and why do you want to be yourself?
A fantasy version of yourself.
Fantasy version.
Super Anthony.
Yeah, right? That's like, I have a Nintendo, the Wii U, and you can play, like, as your little me character in all these games. I'm like, why would I play as myself when I could play as Mario or Yoshi in Mario Kart? I don't understand.
Because you win. Mario doesn't win. You win.
I want to be Mario.
That's the fantasy element.
I know where we're going, technology-wise, but I'm getting old fast, and I don't like it.
Dang kids, your rock and roll music.
Get off my lawn.
You know, as long as it's...
That's when you hit those big... the big 3-0, huh?
Yeah, right? Oh. That kid's not even old enough to annoy me yet, and I'm like... Skrillex in your music.
Well, as long as it's fun, I'm in. I'm along for the ride.
It's a good attitude.
Yeah.
It's better than this old fuddy-duddy.
Well, that's what I found late this week.
All right, cool. All right, well, speaking of fantasy games, we have a special episode this week. We are not lucky enough to go to Origins and talk about all the hot games that came out or were announced or discussed or whatever at Origins. I'll let all the other guys talk about that. A certain podcast network that we're in had a big presence there.
So it was covered. We covered it.
Yeah,
part of the network.
Our colleagues.
Somebody had to watch the house.
Yeah.
And, you know, we drew the short straw, and that's okay.
Yeah. And while we were watching, we came up with an awesome idea.
Yes.
While we were watching the World Cup, we came up with an awesome idea.
Exactly. So what we're going to do, and this is an awesome idea, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun, is the World Cup of Fantasy Tabletop Games. We've chosen 8 number one seeds, which we'll reveal one group at a time. We've seeded them in 8 separate groups with 24 other games. We have 32 games facing off for the title of World's Best Fantasy Tabletop Game. And we're going to run through those. We're going to argue over them. We're going to fight. We're going to hopefully not bite each other.
Ooh, Suarez.
I promise nothing.
It's dirty, man.
Man.
And we'll determine which of these is the best fantasy tabletop game in the world, according to the three of us, from the games we played, excluding anything we don't like.
That's legitimate.
I think so. Who else is doing it?
Look, everybody else went to Origin. They left us at home with the games. We're going to do it.
All right. All right. So let's get started with the first of 8 of our groups. And if you're not familiar with the World Cup seeding system, it's basically 4 teams play together in a group. They each play each other once, 6 total games. The 2 teams with the top points go on to the round of 16 elimination mode. So what we're going to do is we're going to do the same thing with the games, and then we're going to run them off in a bracket of 16 until we have one game left. So the first group, Group A, is number one seed, Mage Knight the Board Game. And then we also have Shadows Over Camelot, Small World, and Myth. So rather than listing off 6 matches, we're just going to kind of have a free-for-all.
Which is the best? Go.
Well, I'm going to start off, and I'm going to back Small World from Days of Wonder. I own this game. I own Underground. I own all the expansions for this. And it's one of my first games in coming into the tabletop hobby. And what I really love about this game is it's quick, it's easy, it has practically, with the expansions, every fantasy race you can possibly imagine. And then in addition, you not only get to play a fantasy race, but you get to add randomly a special ability. So fantasy race with a special ability, that race goes into decline, you pull up another fantasy race, and it's area control. It's wonderful, it's fun, it's fast, it plays with everybody. Small World is a great game.
I like Shadows over Camelot because it's a cooperative game, and I like my fantasy cooperative because I think that's the essence of a fantasy story. It's not a solo adventure. You're with other people. And I was raised in the Dungeons & Dragons world.
So it's basically dangerous to go alone?
Yes. You always had people. Used to read Fafhrd and the Grey Mouser, if I'm pronouncing his name right. All those stories, these adventurers, they go together. They have a companion. They have some other rogues with them. You have to have a group with you. And I think a cooperative game like Shadows over Camelot gives you that feeling like we're all in this together, guys. Let's do it. Great game.
All right. So I have not played either of those games, but I've heard they're all right. my two games in this group are Mage Knight the Board Game, which, to be fair, I have not actually played with other people yet. So okay. I'm basing this off of a solo play. But
which it does play solo.
It does play solo. It plays solo very well, actually, if you like solo games, which I apparently do. So this is one of the, I think it's number 10 on Board Game Geek right now. It's based on an old miniatures game, but it's not even close to the same kind of thing. It just uses the characters. But it's this hybrid exploration, deck building, area control style game. There's like 40 different mechanics going on here, and yet it all flows together extremely smoothly. It builds this very epic, evocative fantasy world around you, and it's fun to explore it. You never know what you're going to come across, and you never know how long you're going to survive while exploring. Which brings me to the other game on the list that I added is Myth. And we reviewed this on episode 27, and this one is, well, as Chris said, it's your box of fun. It's this big open fantasy world. It's a tabletop RPG-style board game. If you want strict rules that tell you how to play a game, it's not Myth. It's, people compare it to Descent. I don't think that's even remotely fair because it's not the same kind of game. It is a dungeon crawl with many, many open source, basically, mechanics. You kind of put your own adventure together. I have not played this as much as I'd like to, but I did have a lot of fun playing it, and I think it's a solid choice.
I don't know. To me, it's like Risk, you know, fantasy Risk.
You like Risk.
Yeah, but it's... I just want little cubes, wooden cubes. That's all I want.
Oh, man. All right. Well, we're going to end up having a lot of Meritrash on this list. It is a fantasy games list, so there's not going to be too many heroes for you to choose from.
And the idea of this list is really, there's so many different things, and we're obviously comparing apples to oranges as far as mechanics go.
Yeah.
But what makes a great fantasy game? Does the game itself really invoke that fantasy theme, whatever that fantasy theme may be to you?
Yeah. So... that in mind, I'm going to say, let's each pick two out of this list, and then we'll see which ones get the most. I'm going Mage Knight and Myth.
Small World and Shadows Over Camelot.
I'm going to go Small World and, it's a pretty tough one because they all do have something special about them. I'm going to go Myth.
Woo, we got the upset in Group A.
Yeah. I think Box of Fun, you know, just seeing all the components in there definitely gives it a little bit of an edge.
All right. So Small World and Myth moving on from Group A.
You guys like it because there's just miniatures in it.
Yes. Yes, I do. You have a problem with that?
Well.
Shadows over Camelot has miniatures, too.
I do like Shadows, and it was one of the games that I put on the list as well. The problem with that game is not the game itself, but the mechanics of the game is just trying to either meet a certain number or meet, you know, try to accomplish certain areas. And it's, I don't really feel the board is beautiful, the artwork's beautiful. I love Arthurian Legend, but I'm not getting a feel that I'm actually you know, this mythological character or creature of some type.
Well, it's not an RPG.
No.
It's light.
It's light. All right.
Fits a theme. Group B. In Group B, we have... This might be our group of death, honestly. We have War of the Ring, the Game of Thrones living card game, Avalon Resistance, and Lords of Waterdeep. So, I don't actually know which of these I'm going to pick. I'm going to let one of you guys go first.
This is a rough list. So much pain here. Let me start off with Avalon. I had a chance to play this last week, and Avalon / Resistance has a lot of great components to it. So you're playing Arthurian Legend, so when you're playing Avalon, you get this random character handed to you. It's either good or evil, and it's matching the characters of that Arthurian legend. What's really great about this game is not just the traitor mechanic, but the fact that each of the characters, the special characters, have special abilities that really do match the fantasy world. So if you get Merlin, you actually get to know who is evil, just like Merlin always had this great wisdom, but you have to be careful because Morgana and there's other characters there too who could kind of take you out during the game. So it's got a nice fantasy theme to it.
The Lords of Waterdeep is a game I've enjoyed. I know, Chris, you've enjoyed it too.
Yep. Me too.
And you, I've never sat down. Have I sat down with you to play that? I don't know.
I don't know
if I have.
But so I guarantee I like it.
All right. And yet I think of it as just a generic worker placement game. A great worker placement game, but I don't see where that's essential. The fantasy is essential to it. Whereas the game I like from this bracket is the Game of Thrones card game. Because I loathe the board game. And this gives you a lot of variety, a lot of interest, choices to make, a little bit of diplomacy action, you know, a little bit of everything.
Yeah, yeah, I'm going to agree with you there. The Lords of Waterdeep argument, we would not be the first or last people to have this argument about the theme of that game. Mm. I'm going to agree with you. I feel like if you read all the flavor text and really got into the story, or if you knew it already, it could be a strong fantasy entry. If you don't, if you're just like, I'm going to sit down and play this game, it plays like a straight-up Euro, you know, boring little cubes.
Yeah.
Pretty, you know, you're purchasing resources by placing little dudes on the thing and then...
But
complete
to be,
quests.
So. Yeah, exactly. But to be fair, it does have the flavor text on the cards. The locations on the board do match Dungeons & Dragons, and it does have historical content to it. The way in which you actually need... When you look at the missions, right? So let's say you have this piety mission, and you're going to take out this vampire coven. You're going to need to send clerics there. It's just not any random cube. You need to send clerics because you're fighting undead. You got to send some clerics in there.
But I am not reading text. I'm just thinking I need this particular colored cube and I need that particular colored cube. That's all it is.
Sure. Yeah. Like if you have a chance, go listen to Secret Cabal's recent review of Yudo.
Sure.
And they talk about this where that game, it just drips with theme and Lords of Waterdeep does not. But Lords of Waterdeep might be a better game. Or at least a couple of them said that. I haven't played Yudo, but I like Lords of Waterdeep a lot. I just don't know that I'm going to pick it as one of my top fantasy games.
I think a fantasy game has to, I mean, to be a champion, it has to have fantasy as a vital part of it.
Yeah, I agree. So the last one on the list in the group here is War of the Ring. This is the top seed. War of the Ring, if you have not seen or heard of War of the Ring, it is literally the War of the Ring. There's the Free Peoples versus the Shadow. You know, this massive, massive board, which is basically the size of two full-size boards put together, about 200 miniatures, almost all of them on the board at once, multiple different mechanics, multiple ways to win. Chris and I played this last weekend for the first time, and it was very tight the entire way through the game. Very asymmetrical play too, which is very cool, so it ups the replayability to swap sides. Having only played this once and maybe three quarters of another time by myself, and then the miniatures, of course, this is probably one of my new favorite two-player games. If it didn't take 3 hours, I would probably play it constantly. This is a lot of fun. So that's the epitome of a thematic board game. It just feels like you're in Lord of the Rings.
And should also mention that this game is not only on Board Game Geek's Top 100 once, but twice for its collector's edition. And the artwork is amazing for this
Incredible.
Game. And you really do feel... This is not... If you've never played this game before, or if you're new to, like, kind of Lord of the Rings, you're always thinking, oh, the movie, yeah, I want some movie image. beautiful, beautiful artwork on these cards, and you really do feel like you're actually doing something. You're actually causing this battle to take place, or you move. You really do. It does invoke that fantasy feel.
Now, the problem I have with this, I'm a Tolkien freak, and to me, it's canon. It can only be one way, and I've really rejected just about any game based on his books, because it, I just can't see how you can successfully create a game that changes or leaves up in the air something that's written in stone that you already know what's going to happen.
That's like every game ever made, though. Like, they're all historical based.
Sorry, Sauron can't win. He can't even have a chance to win. That destroys the whole point of the quest and why this is such a great book, a great series of books.
I think you got to play it, man. It really plays out like the book. It really does. It's close until the end. It's nail-biting. And the way the Shadow wins, if they win, is exactly how they would have won had they won.
You know how I like my Tolkien is an old series of campaigns for Dungeons and Dragons based on different parts of the books, Mirkwood and things like that. Get down and dirty as the characters themselves, but I never got into these other board games. It just
fair enough.
Yeah.
All right. Game of Thrones, living card game. We talked about it briefly. It's like half of our episode 3. I think we all agree that game is awesome. It's way too complicated to explain in detail here, but it's a living card game. It's 2 players or 4 players. It's you play as the different houses in the Game of Thrones, but it's based on the books, not the TV show. That's the one thing I want to say, because I know people have picked this up thinking they're going to see Peter Dinklage and all the other people from the show. That's not who you're going to see. It's artwork, original artwork. There could be spoilers if you haven't watched everything. Just fair warning. All right, so War of the Ring, Game of Thrones, Living Card Game, Avalon Resistance, Lords of Waterdeep. Pick your 2.
I'm still going to have to go with Lords of Waterdeep because it is an awesome worker placement game, and Game of Thrones.
Okay. I'm going to go for War of the Ring. I don't think you get more thematic than when you throw an out token there, especially the original artwork. And I'm going to go for Game of Thrones, a living card game, because the artwork is so beautiful and you really do feel like you're playing one of the houses in this game.
All right. War of the Ring for sure. That's a must for me. But I'm leaning towards Lords of Waterdeep myself. I'm not sure.
Instead of Game of Thrones? Come on.
If you put both of them in front of me, I would probably almost always say Lords of Waterdeep. Not right. As fantasy, but just as a game to play. It's the game I'd want to play of those two.
Which one's more fantasy for you? Yeah, which really kind of gives you the fantasy theme.
Yeah, I guess Game of Thrones does it better, but Game of Thrones just, it feels like I'm reading the books, which is great, and that's a fantasy world in its own right. But
it breaks the link with the TV show, which is important. I think it sets you apart from that, where you can explore the fantasy element even more.
All right.
And not be tied to TV.
You sold me. Game of Thrones, living card game, moving on.
All right.
Group C. This is another tightly contested group, if only because the number one seed is Magic the Gathering. And this is one of the core games of modern gaming, period.
Mm-hmm.
The 20-year-old juggernaut. We also have Dungeon, the board game, the recent released 5th edition, which bastardizes the artwork, and Battlelore 2.0, a game that was very recently updated from the original rules and made much better, I think. And then Tales of the Arabian Nights, which is very much a fantasy game, but not in the way most of these are. It's not that Western style of fantasy, so it's a fun diversion. So, I'll go ahead and take Battlelore 2.0 here and just start there, because that's probably one of my favorite games of the year thus far that we've reviewed. It takes an excellent Battlelore system that uses the command and color system, and it streamlines it to the point that you can play a quick 2-player miniature combat game in about 30 to 40 minutes. High replayability, they're definitely going to expand it. It's based on Terranoth, so if you know Descent or Runebound or Rune Wars, same characters, same world. Fantastic miniatures, just an all-around awesome game, and a really strong entry in the fantasy canon.
So let me jump in there and represent for Dungeon. I had the opportunity to play this game, and when you look at it, it's a $20 game. It seems like the thinnest box possible, and you're basically playing one of these different you know, kind of typical D&D classes. And it's a dungeon, and it's kind of laid out in this large board, and you're going to different areas in the dungeon, and obviously the deeper you go, the more dangerous it is, and the more dangerous the creatures are you're going to fight. And you have these little kind of, at least the version I played, not the new cartoony version, which just is just a nightmare. I mean, and you know me, I'm always up for, you know, a nice kind of friend, family-friendly kind of, you know, Dungeons & Dragons, you know, Dell, but not this. This, no, no, artwork new, bad. Now, the original one was great because you really do feel like your character. Your character does have those special abilities. You are fighting a lot of different fantasy monsters in this, and it plays really quickly, but it plays nice. It does play like a Dungeons & Dragons type of adventure, and it's so surprising to see from such few components. It's a good game.
You know, I'm just going to strike Magic the Gathering and Battlelore off right away. Those are battle games. And especially, you see MTG kids there. I'm not a collectible card game guy, okay? But to just see them, kids who play this game religiously, it's just a strategy game to them. It's really all it is. They know all the numbers, all the powers of each card, and it's not like watching Pokemon on TV when it's all big fantasy. I give you this monster and that monster. No. So Dungeon's a classic. I like it. Liked it when I was younger. And Tales of the Arabian Nights, I'm gonna stomp for that. Because that's the essence of what fantasy is. It's a storytelling. It's Scheherazade. It's creating a whole world. And if you get into the storytelling aspects of games like Gloom, is another good example. Betrayal and House on the Hill. You can have a lot of fun with it. And what was that? There was another one. Anyway, you're creating a whole world around you. And the components are just awesome in that game.
And it has a very much choose your own adventure type of mechanic to it. So you face this, you know, wanderer, what do? You chase him, you fight him, you offer him some money, and then something crazy happens. So it really does. We typically tend to think of fantasy as the Tolkien kind of universe, but fantasy around the world. And this really does kind of give us a nice fantasy theme to it. So this is a tough group.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Magic, man, that ate up too much of my money when I was a kid.
See?
And it's got a really strong background of lore. There's a lot of story there. They're talking about making a movie out of it.
Sure.
It's a lot of great characters. I played the game for 5 years, and I don't remember a dang character in the game, because like you said, it's a strategy game. You don't care. You don't pay attention. So I don't think, while it could be thematic if you care and read it, I never did. I don't know a lot of people who do.
So you're saying, like, the gameplay itself doesn't invoke...
No. No, I don't.
Good artwork.
So. Yeah, beautiful artwork, beautiful backstory, and there's a lot of novels that go with it, too, that are great, but I don't know, I don't feel it. Dungeon's great. If you have a chance, stop by somewhere and see if you can find that 4th edition before they purge it and you have to buy the 5th edition. I actually picked it up because I know they're going to dump it soon. So I don't want that new one.
And it's like 20 bucks. It's like 20 bucks.
20 bucks, yeah.
For 20 bucks, one. And you're going to get a great game out of that.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go with Dungeon and Battlelore. Those are the two in this group that I enjoy the best, that I feel the strongest fantasy-wise.
I'm doing Dungeon. I you know, looking at the box, looking at the game, it doesn't seem to be the type of game where you're like, yeah, this is going to be great. This is good. It doesn't look that way. But when you play it, it really does invoke that kind of fantasy theme. Now, Magic. I dabbled in Magic. Can I say that? Hey, there you go. it never really drew me in, as Drew was saying. I think because the mechanic is so hard as far as battling is concerned, and the mathematical kind of formula of the mana you need to tap in order to do this, that, and the other. Great game, but for me, I'm going to have to go with Tales. Just because playing that game, while it does absolutely crazy things to you, and it doesn't seem like you could make a right choice on any good day of the week, you're like, there's a beggar, I'm going to give him money. He curses you, he turns out to be a dragon. No, that's terrible. You see another beggar, what do? You hit him over the head, turns out to be a real beggar. Oh, it does really give you that fantasy theme where anything could happen at any moment.
I know. You have like a dozen different choices in any given situation, but then there's that plus minus die, which could anything could happen on it. So there's too much of an element of randomness,
sure.
But still, it's pretty cool to be able to choose between a dozen different things, not knowing how it's going to turn out.
All right, so Group C, Dungeon, and Tales of the Arabian Nights. Yep. Moving on. Group D, this is where we have a lot of one-word names. Descent. I guess we could throw a second edition in there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Ascension, and I'm just going to say Ascension. I know there's like four versions of the game now, but let's stick with the base game.
Sure.
Talisman.
And there's a million versions for that,
fourth edition. Yeah. We'll say fourth edition base. And then Defenders of the Realm. All right. Out of this group, I'd say I know Ascension best. Ascension, you know, it's a deck-building game. It's basically, there's a home row. You buy cards out of it. There's two resources. You're either going to pick up, you know, magic cards and heroes that are going to have various effects, or you're going to do battle with various monsters on the board. The goal being to get the most points by the end of the game. When the points run out, the pool runs out, game over. Very much similar to Dominion, very much similar to all those other deck builders, but really kind of takes it and themes it thickly with the fantasy world. Definitely feels like it. And the various expansions, which are standalone, which is awesome, which I think is a must with a deck builder, because otherwise it gets crazy. The various expansions all take that same theme and build on it in their own way. Got the artwork issue, but you know, the world itself is very consistent. I like it.
I do love Ascension much more than Dominion. Dominion is just a card game. You're turning over cards and trying to get more cards and whatever. Ascension, and I think what makes it set apart is how it categorizes all the cards into mechanical and what are the different... You really have to understand the different monsters, their natures, understand the weapons that you have and how they affect certain monsters. It draws you more into the fantasy world, so you have to pay more attention.
And it's one of the first deck building games that I played right after Dominion. Ascension kind of popped out to the scene and really grabbed everyone's attention. The artwork and the creatures were unique. Now, for me, the artwork is unique to the point where I don't like the artwork, but it really does have its own world and universe kind of there, so I can respect it from that point of view.
Yeah, definitely.
I'll also jump in and speak up for Defenders of the Realm. This is a Richard Lanius game, and it is the game, because if you've never played this game before, it's very much like Pandemic as the mechanics. So you are one of, and it has expansion, so you are one of these different adventurers, and each adventurer has its own little sheet. So you could be this special dwarf, or you could be an eagle rider or a paladin, and just a number of different characters and great male and female representation. And in this game, you are defending the realm. So you start off at the castle, and there are four different generals. So there's the dragon, there's the undead and the orcs and so forth. And just like Pandemic, you're pulling cards and you're seeing where the darkness spreads, and these little characters keep coming on the board and kind of spreading across the kingdom and creating darkness. And unlike Pandemic, your individual character can do so many different things and are very thematic. So the wizard can teleport around the board, throw fireballs to take out a large number of characters. So it has a lot of feel. When you're playing this game, you really do feel like you're playing a fantasy game.
And like Pandemic, it's cooperative. So
yes.
That's an essential part of a great fantasy game.
Meh.
Anthony likes to go alone, despite
You cut me off before I could say, for me.
There you go. There's the part that matters. other two games on this list, Talisman, the classic. I don't really like Talisman, but I did put it on the list.
You got to have Talisman on the list.
I don't know, man. It's like a love-hate relationship. I have had fun with it. I've also had a horrible time with it. So it's the kind of game that if everybody's playing and there's food out and beer, I'll play and probably have a decent enough time hanging out with people, but I'm not going to go out of my way to play it, and I probably will never own it.
You think it's a drinking game? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I think so. It's the monopoly of fantasy games.
Oh, yeah. I'm glad wow. I've never played it.
So that's Talisman. Descent, another game, well, the one game on this list I haven't played, but had to be put it on the list because it's kind of the... At least if you're going to say big, regularly expanded game from Fantasy Flight's library, this is one of the ones. It's not your typical dungeon crawl. You've got your overlord versus the group mechanic. Everybody knows about that one, but it's, you know, they find fun ways to make a difference. Heavily story based, trying to turn somehow the idea of a role playing game and a dungeon master into a board game, which nobody's perfected yet.
No,
but
hasn't happened.
Seems to be one of the favorites out there, so it's on the list.
Okay, so I'm going to start off then this time. I have to go for Defenders of the Realm. It's just, it's so, it has so much theme to it, and the gameplay is solid. And as Drew said, it really is that cooperative kind of like, we're going in as a guild, we're going to save the world kind of situation. Mm-hmm. And not just, hey, we're going to take out some monsters. We're saving the realm, yeah. And that's really fantasy. And then I'm also going to back up Ascension. Now, if you listen to this podcast, you're probably shocked because I am not a fan of that artwork. And yeah, I mean, but it really does have its own universe. The characters, the creatures are very unique. And when you see that game out there, you know that it's a fantasy game. There's no questioning that at all.
Okay, let's cut and paste some of the artwork from Magic the Gathering and put it on the Ascension card.
Yes, oh, I would love that.
That would be awesome.
Yeah.
Let's do that.
Mash right. up.
That'd be a project.
It's not even a mashup. All you need is tape.
Yeah, that's it.
Tape up.
Drew, what do you think?
I'm just going to agree with... I know we're supposed to, you know, be butting heads, but no, on this one I agree with Christopher.
All right. I'm with you guys on Ascension. I know it doesn't matter because you both agree on Defenders of the Realm, but I don't tend to like cooperative games very much. I have not actually played this, but just the way you describe it, I'm not sure I would actually enjoy it that much. I'm going to go with Descent because if there's two games I haven't played, I like what Descent sounds like because at least there's a possibility I could be the Overlord versus Defenders of the Realm, which sounds like Pandemic, which I'm not a very big fan of. So I'm going to go with Descent. They're still knocked out, but they got a point.
All right.
Moving on, Ascension and Defenders of the Realm. All right, Group E. We're moving on to Group E, and this is the other big elephant of the room game, number one seed, Dungeons & Dragons. I know that we're kind of pulling one random RPG out of the group, but if you're going to pick one, it's got to be D&D. Sorry, Pathfinder fans, got to be D&D.
Aww.
other games in this group, Smash Up, Discworld, Ankh-Morpork, and Munchkin.
This is, to me, the group of death. There's some tough ones here. It's Discworld. Come on. You know, a great Discworld game, and this isn't, it's not even going to make it out of this group. I know that.
Probably not.
So D&D, obviously, but it's got to be retro D&D, classic D&D for me. And Munchkin, because I think we need to have one light fantasy game here, and Munchkin has consistently fit the bill with being able to laugh at all the other fantasy games out there.
Well, I'll cover the other one then, Smash Up. So you're smashing two decks together. They can be zombies, they can be ninjas, they could be, at this point, they could be practically anything. So and then you're going to play the cards out there and you're going to try to capture bases. So it has a lot of fantasy theme depending on what you're throwing together, yeah, but it could be sci-fi, it could be other things as far as that's concerned too.
Zombie ghosts.
It could be zombie like ghosts. So it has a lot of feel for that.
Yeah, I mean, D&D is the obvious one. I love me some old-fashioned D&D. Second edition, third edition. We'll see about the new one. Fourth edition, we'll pretend that didn't happen. you can even throw Pathfinder in there. They're using the D20 rule set, so whatever. I do love Dungeons & Dragons, so that's an obvious one for me. Of the other three, nothing really stands out. I like Smash Up. I don't feel that it's like a strictly fantasy game. It's like an all-genre kind of a thing. Like, it could be anything. Just as much sci-fi as it is fantasy. I have not played Discworld. I want to.
It's a good one. You'll like
it. I love those books.
Yeah.
Like, it's great. It's fantastic. And Munchkin, it's not a bad game. I don't dislike it, but it's not one I, like, go for either. So, for me, it's, I don't know, a coin flip in here. I want to try Discworld, so I'm going to say Discworld.
Well, Terry will be really happy with your help out there.
Gotcha. Yeah, with his 52 books making millions of dollars, I think he's fine.
Right now he's listening, and he was just holding on, and you just made his day.
Ankh-Morpork!
Well, I'm gonna jump in there. It has to be Dungeons & Dragons. Whether it's a Pathfinder or any other version, it's D&D. And just because you got to have D&D, you got to have the lighter side of it, and it's got to be Munchkin.
Mm-hmm. Because every single fantasy trope you can think of, Munchkin has attacked it. Even Santa Claus, he's fantasy, and he rips Santa Claus apart. It's great.
All right, you guys are colluding. This isn't fair.
Oh,
picking the same games every time, guys.
Uh-huh. I thought you liked Smash Up, Chris. Come on.
I do like Smash Up, but Munchkin does it better.
Yeah.
All right, next group.
Great, Group F. Moving on to Group F here. Number one seed here is Summoner Wars. We picked this a while back as our number one two-player game. I still hold to that. It's also one of my favorite card games and miniature games. Without miniatures, even. How is that even possible? Other games in this group, Wiz War. And we have the Castle Ravenloft Dungeons & Dragons board game. And Yggdrasil, which is actually a completely different fantasy mythos.
It's a cooperative, and it's more of a mythos, a religious mythos, where it's you're fighting the Norse gods.
Yes.
I just wasn't impressed with that game.
It's a co-op game, Drew.
Yeah, I know it's a co-op game, but I don't see it. I wouldn't choose that. Wiz War is another one of those games that goes back to my earlier days. That's been through a lot of editions, too. Mm-hmm. But it's fascinating. You get to be a wizard and fight other wizards. Summoner Wars, I wish I could. I know people have played it. I wish I could play it. So I can't go for that. But I'll fall back on D&D because it's nice to see. It was a good implementation. It's a good implementation of Dungeons & Dragons to a tabletop board game background.
So that's your first choice, and what's your second one, Drew?
Oh, Wiz War. Wiz War.
Okay. Yeah. I'm going to do Wiz War just because the cards are so great, and you really feel like you're a wizard throwing out a whole bunch of spells there.
Yeah.
That's a lot of fun. Second one's a little hard. I'm going to go with Yggdrasil, just because the Norse mythology is something a little different, but you're actually getting to play with all the different characters from that realm. It's not just you're fighting one monster, you're fighting all of the gods, and you can play as all of the heroes, and you have all of their special weapons and abilities, and it's that grandness of it. You're trying to save the world. So,
yeah, I mean, I think I like Yggdrasil, but I agree with Drew. I don't think, to me, it doesn't fit the traditional, like, what I'm thinking of as fantasy games, because it's an existing mythos. Like, when I put this list together, you know, we were cutting them down, I cut Cyclades and Kemet for the same reason. It's hard.
Good games!
They are great games. It's just hard to put them in with the other types of fantasy we're talking about, because these are, like, original worlds created by their authors and not mythos that are 2,000-3,000 years old that we're just drawing upon. Yeah. To me, that's different, so I can't really give it to that.
It's miles ahead of Lords of Waterdeep, though, incorporating theme. It's just...
Oh, it's strongly thematic.
When it comes right down to it, it's just another worker placement game, but a very intricate one.
And hard.
Yeah.
Very hard. For me, it's got to be Summoner Wars number one. I love Summoner Wars. It's quick, it's easy, it's fast. It's a two-player game. You can play it in 20 minutes. Multiple decks, different ways. Customizable decks, if you want them to be. Can be very complicated if you want to play it at a tournament level, or very simple if you just want to teach somebody really fast and play this fast card game. And the theme really does come through with the different styles of play that each of these races has. Between the other two, it's a bit of a toss-up, but I'm going to go with Wiz War. I just honestly have more fun with that one, and you do feel like a wizard running around blasting each other. So Wiz War is a fun game. That's an easy one for me.
Then we got a three-way split.
We do have a three-way split. So Wiz War's in, but everything else got a one vote. So
make your pitch.
Yeah. Everybody just kind of sell your game, and we'll try one more time, see if anybody changes the mind.
It's hard to push D&D, the board game. I'll back off and retire my vote from that.
All right.
But I don't know what else to vote for. I've played
Yggdrasil, Norse gods,
but I haven't played Summoner Wars. So I'm just going to delete my vote and let you two guys fight it out.
Oh, I see how it is.
Yeah.
I was going to abstain from the voting. If only Daniel was here, he would know what to do.
Daniel would like Summoner Wars.
You think?
It's quicker and easier, yeah.
But it's cooperative. He likes co-op games.
Yeah, but it's long and hard.
I know. That's what a co-op game is supposed to be.
Yggdrasil takes like an hour to teach somebody how to play.
Yeah.
All right.
Steep curve.
All right, I'll give you Summoner Wars on that.
Yeah.
Our friend at Plot Hat Games, so.
That's what I'm talking about. All right, moving on to Group G. Number one seed in this group is Rune Wars, another representative from the Terranoth universe. We also have Seasons and Lord of the Rings, the living card game, and Cheaty Mages. All right, guys. So Rune Wars is, well, epic is the best word I can use to describe this game. Think of old school classic battle games, 7 hours at the table, multiple bathroom breaks, ordering pizza, but in this vast open fantasy world with beautiful artwork, wonderful cards, miniatures everywhere, and just this tight, very compactly wound battle system that just plain works over the course of 7 rounds. It's an awesome game. If it didn't take so darn long, we would play it a lot more often.
Sure.
Seasons I haven't played. Chris, that's you.
Seasons is a great game. It's really colorful, has nice artwork. It's a card drafting game, so you'll be building a hand of Magic. You'll be splitting the hand up so you can play different cards at different ages. You'll be trading those cards in for points. You'll be picking up tokens, which allows you to do your magical spells. A really interesting game. It flies under the radar because it doesn't have that well-known IP, but it's a great game.
Has one of my favorite all-time mechanics, the rondelle.
Yes.
Where certain items are worth more at certain times of the year.
Exactly.
Great. So obviously that would be one of my favorites. And then the other is Cheaty Mages, because I think if you're going to immerse yourself in the fantasy world and you know, work alongside all these creatures and wizards, make some money off of them, which is what that game is all about, Cheaty Sure. Mages. Making money off fantasy beings.
And then Lord of the Rings, the living card game, is another great game because you get to dive once again into the Lord of the Rings mythos, but which is always fun for Drew.
Yeah.
But since it's a living card game, you could actually take these different adventures, and this is a two-player game. And you're fighting against evil. You have all the different characters there. The artwork is amazing. It's a really good choice.
Guess what? I know who wins.
I actually picked up Lord of the Rings living card game the other day because apparently it's a very strong solo, single-player component to it, because it's a storytelling game. You're playing through chapter packs. And the core game doesn't actually take place during the novels. It takes place between Bilbo's birthday and when Gandalf comes for Frodo. So it's not actually messing with the story itself. It's telling other stories about
filling
other characters.
Filling in the gaps.
Yeah. So it's a lot of fun. It's very tight and it's hard. Like, it's a hard game. So, and at this point, 4 or 5 years in, they have like 60 some odd chapter packs.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So if you like this game, it's very, very, very deep. And it's in a world everybody already knows. So in terms of what I'm going to pick out of this group, Rune Wars for sure. That's an easy one for me. I love this game. I wish we got to play it more. And then I'm going to go with, you know, I need at least one lighter game in here, too. So I'm going to go with Cheaty Mages.
Ah. It's got to be Rune Wars. There isn't a game as epic as Rune Wars. Maybe Defenders of the Realm kind of could match it, but Rune Wars is amazing. The second choice is going to be a little rough there, too. Lord of the Rings does a nice job with the living card game. Cheaty Mages is kind of fun because you're throwing different spells and things. Seasons tends to be a little heavy. It's not something that you can kind of jump into. This is pretty much a really rough pick. I'm going to go with Cheaty Mages just because it offers a different audience an entrance level to fantasy.
And it's a whole new way of treating fantasy, the fantasy element. You're coming at it from a different angle. Sort of light, but not quite like Munchkin. It's a financial game. It's got that economic angle.
Yeah,
so
it's quick.
Yeah, it is.
Really
quick.
Hard group to pick through, too.
Seasons and Cheaty Mages.
Yep.
Okay. So we have Rune Wars and Cheaty Mages moving on, but I think it was very close between all four.
All four of them are really just amazing
games. Any of these
games
could have made it, yeah. All right, so the last group, Group H. We're going to dive right in here. Another great group. Mice and Mystics is on this list. This is a game we're going to review very soon. I've had this for a little while, and it's a, you know, it's a cooperative dungeon crawl, but it's with mice against rats
and mystics
and bugs. So it's fun. It's cute. Terra Mystica, which we reviewed about 6 months ago. This is definitely a Euro by every definition of it, but it's got, you know, a solid fantasy backbone to it. I'm not going to say thorough theme, because how much theme are you going to see in a Euro? But it is for a Euro. It does have a lot of fantasy going on there. Citadels
has some characters that are fantasy-based, especially when you play the second deck. When you play the witch and there's other characters like that.
Oh, more. Yeah, you're getting deeper into that world.
Yet, it's just the basic card game.
It's basic card game.
Yeah. And then the Quarriors, which, again, could be called another basic kind of deck builder type of game, but...
With dice.
Yeah, I think it's more than that. I mean, the characters. I mean, you're more invested in the characters, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think when you throw in that third expansion, the Quartifex, with the questing, mm-hmm. It becomes even more fantasy thematic.
Yeah.
So
I would go with Quarriors. Terra Mystica, I haven't really chosen any really deep, heavier games, but I love, you can immerse yourself in that game.
Okay.
And in the fantasy, I think.
I'm going to jump in for Terra Mystica and Mice and Mystics, because it offers a lot of theme in a little box. Especially if they're little mice, because then it's really compact.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to agree with you, Chris. We have another straight agreement group. No fighting here.
What? I didn't choose Mice and Mystics, though. I didn't go with that.
You
didn't. You didn't.
Quarriors. I need to play more of that, because I wasn't impressed so far with the taste I've had of Mice and Mystics.
Okay.
It just seems like a hack and slay type of game. I want to see more of it.
Yeah, we definitely need to dig in more. I've gone 3 or 4 chapters in. I know we just played the first chapter together thus far. It definitely gets deeper. And the further you get into the story, the more involved you get. It becomes more.
I know. You got to give it credit for that. That with the recordings and everything, it really wants you to immerse yourself in the fantasy world.
Yeah. And I think around chapter 2 to 3 is when I really got, really sucked in. Wow. So after that tutorial chapter. So
right.
Mice and Mystics is... If I'm going to play a dungeon crawl, and there's plenty of chapters for the amount of time I play these games, that's one of my favorites. And then Terra Mystica is just one of the best games I've played in the last couple of years, period.
So, great. All right. Okay.
All right. So that is the end of group play. We now have our 16 finalists, and we're going to bracket them up. We'll come back, and we'll run through and see who comes out number one. Alrighty, we are back. I have randomized all of the seeds. We're not going to try to measure them out because I don't think we kept track. But we have everything broken down, 1 to 16.
We measured it by magic.
Ooh, nice.
See what I did?
Anthony waved the wand.
I used the Magic Internet's free tournament bracket creator thing.
Which is magic.
I don't know. We could always seed it by the BGG ranking.
If you want to go do that, we'll just keep talking. As you can tell, we recorded that live, so there is no time to fix the bracket. It is what it is. There are some unfair matchups in here.
In their end, there can be only one.
There can be only one.
Yes.
All right, so first up, the number one seed, according to this thingamajig, and the number 16 seed, War of the Ring versus Terra Mystica.
That seems about appropriate.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to throw out War of the Ring there. Terra Mystica is a nice game. It's a great Euro. It has some theme as far as picking the characters. But when you play your race, you're really not playing your race. You're doing something slightly kind of relatable, but not much.
I'm going to go with Terra Mystica. It's a solid game, and I don't like Lord of the Rings games.
As we've established. I, however, do, so War of the Ring it shall be.
All right. And I'm going to vote against it every single round.
Just eventually one of us might also do that. All right, next up we have Game of Thrones, living card game, versus Dungeon.
As much as I like Dungeon as a classic, I think the Game of Thrones, the living card game, has implemented the culture, the world of that, of Westeros, beautifully. I get right into it, enjoy it, especially because it's based on the books and not the TV.
I'm going to have to go the other way. I love Game of Thrones, but most of the time you are just playing lords and ladies and knights. In Dungeon, you're actually playing fantasy. You're facing fantasy creatures. And other than the dragons and an occasional creature here and there, Dungeon is the better fantasy game.
I've been reading Game of Thrones since 97, 98, whenever they first started coming out. And this, to me, is like redefined what fantasy is in the last 15 years. And so I gotta go Game of Thrones, because it's like the perfect gaming implementation of... the book series. All right, next up we have Rune Wars versus Munchkin. So the heaviest game on the list versus the lightest. This should be interesting.
Yeah, Rune Wars is just too heavy. You want to be able to enjoy your fantasy, so it's the most Munchkin's the most enjoyable fantasy game out there. I'll go with that.
I disagree. Heavily. It is a fantasy game, and it's out there. I don't know how about the most enjoyable.
Fun.
I'm not going to bring the Munchkin hate like some people like to do. I don't hate it. I just, there's a lot of games on this list I would pick instead of Munchkin in a lot of circumstances. This is a hard one, though, because there are also very few circumstances in which I would play Rune Wars.
Mm.
But I am going to go with Rune Wars because I've had a lot more fun with them.
I have a lot of love for Munchkin, as the listeners know, and own a good chunk of Munchkin.
A good chunk of Munchkin.
The only reason I'm going to end up going for Rune Wars is because so much of Munchkin tends to be topical. Like, the joke is topical. You know, it's kind of current everyday kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So it does pull away from the fantasy just because it's trying to make a joke that we would all understand in this day and age. So, and Rune Wars is just theme with theme sauce with theme gratings on top of theme.
Dipped and then in theme, and deep fried and theme.
And there's some theme on the side too, which is always nice.
You know, one of these days, they'll make you pay. They're going to come out with a Rune Wars Munchkin.
See, that I could see Steve Jackson doing that because he's starting to do that with some of his games. So that's going to happen.
I would play that.
I would buy that.
Well, we know you'd buy that.
I would buy it.
Okay, so moving on, Rune Wars. Next up, Mice and Mystics versus Defenders of the Realm. I'm just going to go ahead and start this. Mice and Mystics, come on.
All right, so I'm going to follow up with Defenders of the Realms.
Oh, come on.
Come on.
No. It's co-op.
Come on. It's co-op.
It's co-op.
Defenders, they're both co-ops.
Mine's better.
Mine has better pieces and things.
That's unlikely.
Oh, you will see, my friend.
I painted mine.
Oh, Mice and Mystics have mice. Is that what it's all about?
I painted them.
Play Cinderella the board game. That has mice.
That's harsh, man. It's got spiders, too.
And it's fantasy. Cinderella's a fantasy game. You know, it's fantasy. I don't know if there's a real Cinderella game, but I'm just saying.
But if there was, it'd be Mice and Mystics. That's what he's saying.
Yeah. I haven't played Defenders of the Realm, so I can't make fun of it. I don't know.
Perfect defense!
Damn it!
All right, I will defend Defenders of the Realm.
There you go.
All right. Stupid Mice and Mystics not being serious enough for you guys. All right, Dungeons & Dragons versus Cheaty Mages. Well, that's actually a good seating.
Yeah,
that works. 2 versus 15, that was good.
That works out.
I could see Cheaty Mages... Well, it is basically Dungeons & Dragons. Taking all these Dungeons & Dragons characters and creating the world, but you got to go with the original. Dungeons & Dragons.
Yeah, I agree. Only RPG on our list, so it's got to represent. And Cheaty Mages, it's a light game. It's fun, it's cute, but Dungeons & Dragons, it's iconic. It's a part of my childhood.
For me, I mean, Cheaty Mages does a nice job in what it tries to do. And, I mean, obviously, this is like... You know, it's not apples and oranges. This is kind of like a semi-truck versus an orange. So, running over the orange. So, just by that alone, it's got to be Dungeons & Dragons. But even beyond that, when you're playing Dungeons & Dragons, you are playing the character, and it's just by miles.
Yeah. All right, so that was an easy one. Next up, two games that probably fit pretty well together, Myth or Tales of the Arabian Nights.
Well, you got your Box of Fun, which really has a nice dungeon crawl, has all the miniatures that you could possibly want.
Or Box of Misery.
Yeah, Box of Misery. That's true, too.
Just waiting for the next bad thing to happen.
So as far as bad things happening, whether it's little creatures popping up or Arabian Nights kind of craziness, I'm going to go with some Arabian Nights.
Yeah, you can collect skills and abilities, which will help you through the game. You can scale the game shorter, longer, and I think it scales well for more people or fewer. I love it for creating that world.
Yeah, I think what we have here too is two very different styles of storytelling game. One which is very heavily dependent on the players telling their own story, and one which tells you a great story that you're then part of and mm-hmm. you can help shape.
Sure.
Tale of the Arabian Nights, very much a part of my childhood too. I read that book and all the stories in it over and over again. So I'm going to go with Tales of the Arabian Nights. I think this is just one of the more fun storytelling games that exists out there. Yeah. And it's a little bit less work than Myth. overall, just in terms of telling that story. And yeah, Misery aside, it's a fun game. Next up on the list, Summoner Wars versus Wiz War. So for me, this is a no-brainer. It's Summoner Wars. I don't know what else to say about that. I mean, Wiz Wars is a fun game. It's definitely a little bit older, though. It's got that, you know, it's, you can end up in kind of a crunch where you're just chasing each other around the board.
It's Ameritrash.
It's early Ameritrash, though. It's, I don't know, it's not as finely tuned as some of the more recent games using similar mechanics. They both very much feel fantasy to me, but Summoner Wars is just, it's faster. You're going at each other fast, and such thematic decks, so that's an easy one for me.
I've never played Summoner Wars, but I would have to concede that it's a much stronger one. Wiz Wars is just your light. You know, I still think of it in the Parker Brothers, Milton Bradley kind of world. It's fun and light, but not really involved in that world as much.
I've played both, and they both have a lot of strong elements to it. Summoner Wars has a lot of different races you can play as, which is fun. Wiz Wars has a lot of nice spells you can cast, so there's a lot of nice little chits which you can throw on the board and things you can transform into. So it really does own the being a wizard in that kind of situation where there's just unlimited power and unlimited things you can do. So they're both unlimited as far as their reach. It's a hard one there, but just because and only because the amount of races Summoner Wars would move on.
Last one in this initial round here, Small World versus Ascension. The two polar ends of the artistic scale.
Man. Yeah.
Total Cutesy versus Abstract.
Well, I'm going to go with Small World on that because it covers the wide range of fantasy, not just with the races, but the characteristics, and allows you to reconstitute them in so many different ways.
Yeah, I like Small World, but Ascension to me, thus far, it's been my favorite deck building game. I still play it on the iPad. I've liked every expansion for it. It's a strong, very involved thematic deck builder that I think is a very good entry in the fantasy scape, even if the artwork has something to be desired.
And for me, it's not just the challenge with Ascension in part is not just the artwork, but at least initially, and I know it's been somewhat corrected in later versions, but you're just buying the most powerful card a lot of times, and it's not really as strategy as I would probably want for a deck builder game, so I'm going to have to go Small World.
I can concede that one. I'm not going to argue it. I would rather play Ascension. I think some of the newer versions of it fix that problem pretty thoroughly. So.
Yeah, but you know, we're talking about a lot of different expansions for all the games too.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Small World's a good game though.
Not the Underground expansion though. Don't like it.
Okay,
fair enough. I haven't played it, so I don't know. All right, so that finishes up round one there. First up in round two, we're in the final eight here. We have War of the Ring, a very thematic, licensed game based on one of the most epic fantasy stories ever told, versus the exact same thing from 80 years later, Game of Thrones living card game. So we have, honestly, these are very close in terms of how well they pull the thematics of each book series. They both really draw on the feelings and emotions of those books and the style of the writer. So it's a tough one for me.
Yeah, it's absolutely old fantasy versus new fantasy. And for both authors, they definitely invoke such a powerful, rich, thick world and really, really, really thick books. So you can't, you know, obviously this is getting hard, and this is really nice how this bracket worked out, because I don't know if you could find a better competition for War of the Ring than Game of Thrones living card game. For me, this is really hard because they're really both are so deep on fantasy. But as far as gameplay goes, being that War of the Ring lets you do different things depending on what side you're on, I'm going to go with War of the Ring.
I'm going against it just on principle. I've already stated. But George R.R. Martin has had a tougher time writing, since you happen to bring it up, than Tolkien. Tolkien was just toiled in obscurity and wrote whenever he could and still, his family's estate is still publishing stuff from his notes. Martin has the whole world scrutinizing him.
Sure.
Poor guy. I feel sorry for him. So I'm going to vote for his game.
I could flip a coin on this one, honestly. I feel like War of the Rings is going to end up being a better game, in my opinion, just long term. But I've only played it the one time. So it's hard to say, you know, long term. I've played Game of Thrones a dozen times, two dozen times, and really like it. Have played every, you know, every family there. So that is by far my favorite, at least my favorite LCG, and probably one of my favorite fantasy games, period. But War of the Rings is just such a good game. Mm.
I mean, I think they're evenly matched as far as invoking their fantasy world. You know, War of the Ring, as far as, you know, Frodo has his own mission and he has his own thing that he's doing, and then the armies of light, they're doing their own thing and they have their own mechanic. The Shadow Army, obviously, they're doing their own thing. And then in Game of Thrones, you have the same type of thing as far as mechanics are concerned too, because the Starks have that powerful military, the Lannisters, you go for the intrigue as far as that's concerned. So each of them have different mechanics as far as how they play. It's really a tough match both ways.
Yeah, I think so. Only because I've played it more, I think I'm going to go with Game of Thrones this time. Yeah, I mean, War of the Ring...
Good, we've finally seen the last of that.
I think so. I think War of the Ring is a better game, but on a personal level...
It takes... I mean, yeah, you can play a lot more Game of Thrones and still enjoy it as a fantasy game. Even if you've played it a dozen times. Whereas the War of the Ring, it's a lot of work.
Mm. It is a lot of work, yeah. But it's worth it. It's worth it. All right, so moving on to the next level here, we have Rune Wars versus Defenders of the Realm.
Now, this is another great matchup because Rune Wars is this beautiful board with beautiful miniatures invoking these fantasy elements and this war that's going on. And the same thing is true for Defenders of the Realm, where you're having beautiful miniatures, beautiful elements, monsters and heroes, a lot of different abilities, a lot of great text, both great universes. I don't want to go first.
I will. Rune Wars.
All right, there you go.
No.
Easy.
It's another one of those I don't want to get into games. It's like, I don't want to start. Just hearing that name, it's like too much. Whereas Defenders of the Realm, maybe it's because I'm more into it. I can understand that.
Sure.
I can grasp it.
Why? Why does it have to come back? Yeah, this is really rough. I think just because it tells a better, more coherent story, whereas the other one is just very choppy as far as you accomplish this, you accomplish that, and it turns out that if you put all those things together, it's a win. I'm going to go with Defenders.
All right, next up we have Dungeons & Dragons versus Tales of the Arabian Nights.
Once again, another great matchup. It's all about story.
It's storytelling, yeah. The cool thing about Dungeons & Dragons is it devolves upon one person, the Dungeon Master, to tell that story. So if you have a really good DM, it's a beautiful story. And if you're playing a campaign and not just walking into a cave and killing monsters... you really immerse yourself in that story. So it's got a lot more going for it in that sense than Arabian Nights does.
Now, obviously, it depends on the edition you're playing, whether it's, you know, 3.5, 4.0, if it's the new Dungeons & Dragons, if it's Pathfinder or one of its other multitude of clones, you're going to have a different experience, whether it's good or not.
I'm a campaign guy, yeah.
Yeah.
Very retro.
Tales of Arabian Nights does so many things so well, but it's just a little too random, and I have to go D&D.
Hmm. Yeah. Oh, the DM sitting behind his screen rolling dice, that's not random.
But, you know, the book, as far as it's concerned, it should have some internal logic.
It does.
I like the fact that Tales really weaves this amazing story where you never know what's going to come next, and really interesting characters come out, and you do find that in D&D too, but at least I feel like I am a character, whereas Arabian Nights, sometimes just things are happening to me and it doesn't really determine who I am.
Well, the randomness in D&D is explainable.
Sure.
you're presented with a situation, you make a choice, and the Dungeon Master rolls the dice, and you know it's either going to be this or that. Whereas stuff in Arabian Nights come out of left field. That
it's
just,
true.
What? What?
Why? Why would that happen?
Oh, man. Yeah, I think with the right group, Dungeons & Dragons is always going to be more fun than Tales of the Arabian Nights.
Sure.
It doesn't matter what group you're in with Tales. It can be a tough time.
You just have to hold on to the table and just take the ride.
And it's too long for how tough it can
be.
That's
true.
So I'm going to go D&D too there. That's an easy one for me. Last one in this group, we have Summoner Wars versus Small World.
This is another great bracket here too, because you're talking about area control, you're talking about different races in battle against each other, and how their special abilities come into play. Both great games. I love them both. I played them both. Maybe just because Small World plays with more players, and I happen to like the artwork a lot better there, and it does have a lot of different ways in which you can play the game, whereas Summoner Wars is kind of bound to that two-player board. I'm going to go Small World.
Yeah, imagine taking any of these other fantasy games, and you have all these races, and every time you play it, the races behave differently, and they... You know, that's what Small World does. It mixes it up and keeps it fresh. I like it.
I guess I would go with Summoner Wars, even though the decision's already been made. Every reason I've given before, Summoner Wars just really strikes me as a strong thematic fantasy game. But alas, it is no more in our combat.
That game goes into decline.
It does.
See what I did there?
Yeah.
Okay, nice.
Yeah. All right, so we have our final four. Game of Thrones, Living Card Game, Defenders of the Realm, Dungeons & Dragons, and Small World.
Ooh.
So we're going to have the two semifinals, and then we'll pick a finalist. Game of Thrones, Living Card Game versus Defenders of the Realm. I haven't played Defenders, so I've got to go with Game of Thrones. That's about it. That's my argument.
Okay.
Drew and I have played both of these, so...
Yeah, this is where I would abandon Game of Thrones on this point. Defenders of the Realm, I just think has... I don't know. It's got more of the elements of gaming that you like. You're not tied to a particular story. You create your own story, I guess.
I think for me, too, it's got to be Defenders, just because... A lot of the elements of Game of Thrones that come into play aren't fantasy elements. They're more intrigue and betrayal and backstabbing. And
it's diplomacy in Westeros.
Yeah, diplomacy and stuff like that, which is true, but Defenders of the Realm is fantasy through and through.
Yeah.
Right. I knew that was coming, but...
You held out as long
as you could. If War of the Ring had been the other one,
yeah,
what would you have voted for?
Oh, man, I wish I could have said, but it's not there.
But if it was, I know what you would have voted for,
Drew. Yeah,
so there's no reason to go down that road. I'm just wondering if I could have knocked off this game that I don't know anything about.
Just remember, there's only one bracket to rule them all. And unfortunately, it's this one, so you have to go along with it.
Dang it.
See? Puns!
I gotta look ahead, man. I took the wrong bet. All right, Dungeons & Dragons versus Small World. What do you guys think?
So once again, apples and oranges here.
I know, that's a tough one.
And the truck ran over that orange, too.
Yeah.
Truck ran over that orange.
Yeah. Small World is fun for a light game, but if I want real fantasy I can sink my teeth into. And again, I have to stress, it's got to be the campaign. Small World is just... snack food that you eat and that's it. But boy, it's a heavy meal. It's a steak, Dungeons and Dragons is. Sink your teeth.
Well, I don't think Small World is such a snack, but you're right. I mean, it is definitely a lighter jump into there. And
tasty, but...
It's tasty, but, you know, not being a meat eater. For me, maybe Dungeons and Dragons is a really great salad. So it has a lot of elements to it. It has a lot of different flavors to it. You know, it's something you could always mix up. You can change it up a bit. And you're always going to be surprised with it. So I'm going to go with Dungeons & Dragons.
Me too.
What?
That's all I got.
What?
That was a brave call there.
It was a brave call. Well, the problem is that two of the four final games, I don't really know that well. So apparently I'm playing the wrong games. You guys got to bring these games over that I have not tried. I like Small World. I think it's a fun game, but yeah, Dungeons & Dragons, I mean, come on. when we put this bracket together, we kind of assumed it would look like this towards the end, at least having D&D towards the top, for good reason.
Yeah.
It's just that iconic that... it's just... Yeah, I don't know. There's so many different ways to play it. It's infinite. And all the permutations, minus a couple additions, are just fantastic parts of my gaming history. So D&D's got to be D&D.
I'm going to go the other way. Now, and I think you... Actually, Anthony, you mentioned this earlier, which is it depends on the group. And I think that's a really big element to D&D. I've played a lot of D&D in a lot of different versions. And Drew said this too. It depends on the dungeon master. It depends on the people you're playing with. How long can you get through the campaign? Is it, you know, 3.5 or 4.0? Do we know the system? Did it work out well that night? How are the characters? Is everyone really in character? Are they really playing their hearts out? Do you know the background? There's so much that can go really right with it. And it is the quintessential type of fantasy game. But as far as a fantasy game that you can always play and it always invokes the theme because the players do calculate so much into the final situation and because the different editions do play so much into it, I'm going to defend the realm because I throw that down and I'm going to get a solid play. We're playing as a team. We have the fantasy characters with us. We're fighting. Evil's coming. We're defending the realm. We have the castles. We have the hero quest. The miniatures are beautiful. The card quality is great. And it's a game that's lasted so long. And really nothing has changed to it other than just adding more characters to it. So it's standing the test of time. It's Richard Lanius. You can't really do much better than that. So I'm going to be defending the realm.
That's you, Drew.
Well, I was a dungeon master, so this affects my decision. I always had fun. Whatever side of the screen I was on, I enjoyed it. Because there was so much more to the world that you created than just going out and capturing monsters. We would go to towns. We would, you know, one night we had a gaming night where, okay, we go into a tavern, and we play some games of chance. So we got the cards out. We did a few other things. We had fun, and we played with real, in our version, money. You know, the platinum and the electrum and the all of that. And we had fun. You can do so much with a campaign, a world of Dungeons and Dragons. And yes, it's got to be the classic, the campaign. And I'm trusting that version 5 is going to be a throwback to the best. Of what it used to be, because you can do so much more than any normal board game can be. I would have to always go with Dungeons and Dragons, because the potential is unlimited for what you can do with that.
All right.
So it turns out that our World Cup of Fantasy Games
winner is, no surprise, Dungeons and Dragons.
All right, I'm happy with that.
Congratulations, Wizards of the Coast, and your buckets of money.
And to you and your multiple, endless number of children throughout the universe of different iterations, Pathfinder, and all those other types that came from you.
Yeah, really.
The grandfather of all RPGs.
Yeah, and I don't think... It's tough to think of another game that could have taken that spot. Like, what else is that iconic when you're talking about fantasy?
It depends. You know, everything has a little bit of a benefit there. I think Defenders of the Realm definitely deserve to stand up there. Magic has the popularity, but maybe not the theme. Rune Wars and War of the Ring have that beautiful table play where all the characters and you really feel like you're playing something. The living card games, whether it's Game of Thrones or Lord of the Rings, have those packs where you're always going deeper and deeper into the books, and you really do feel like you're growing in that way. So there's a lot of different types of fantasy world you can get into, and anything on this list would be a great opportunity for you to kind of get involved in the fantasy theme, and there's literally every flavor you could possibly want.
Yeah, so depending on the kind of people you're playing with, the ages, you could find something tailored to everybody.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think that's a great list, and there's just a lot of different types of fantasy in there, and ironically, that final 8 kind of really matched up really well. So if you're looking for like a different, if you want a strongly thematic game, you've got War of the Ring or Game of Thrones LCG. If you want a big epic fantasy immersion, you got Rune Wars or Defenders of the Realm. If you want a strong storytelling game, Dungeons and Dragons or Tales of the Arabian Nights. Yeah. And if you want something a little quicker, not necessarily light, but not quite as headfirst fantasy immersive, you've got Summoner Wars and Small World. So that list of eight right there, that'll take you far.
Keep in mind, fantasy games tend to be on the more expensive side of the scale because there is so much involved in components. But it just adds to the richer experience that you have with it. Even a storytelling game like Tales of the Arabian Nights, incredible components. And the books, which are so richly detailed, that all of these things go toward building that fantasy world that you want.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a reason this is one of our favorite genres, and these are some of our favorite games. Now that we've finished our brackets and argued over what we think is best, though, we want you guys to tell us who you think you should have won, which game you think should have won on BoardGameGeek. So get in the guild. We're going to post this. We'll have the full bracket there. I'll post pictures of my goofy little website I created the bracket on. We'll have all the groups. And we want to know who you would have picked out of those groups and then who you would have picked throughout that bracket, because I'm sure there are plenty of spots in there where you disagree.
As we've already seen, we can be wrong in some ways, so tell us.
Well, we're not wrong here, but you can say we're wrong, and we're happy to defend ourselves.
In the realm!
And even if there's a game we didn't include in the first place that you think should have been in that 32, I'm sure there's plenty of amazing fantasy games out there that we haven't played that should have made this list. So let us know what they are. We'll argue over it, and in 4 years, I guess, if we're still recording this, we'll have a World Fantasy Cup game, tabletop games of 2018.
Over time, some games fall out of favor, and there's going to be a lot of good fantasy games that come out in those 4 years. So, yeah, let's do this again.
All right, guys, so that's everything we're going to have for this week. Big epic episode here, obviously. In 2 weeks, we're going to be back with Mice and Mystics, our full feature review, once we get through a few chapters of that. We've also hit up a few other fun thematic games lately. Rise of Augustus, Colosseum, that old Days of Wonder game that's unfortunately out of print. A couple other fun games that we've gotten to the table. So check back in 2 weeks. And in the meantime, make sure you follow us on Twitter, connect with us on Facebook, and hook up with us on BoardGameGeek. Tell us what your favorite fantasy games are. So for this week, that is all. This is Anthony.
This is Chris.
And this is Drew, who hates Lord of the Ring games.
And until next time, we'll save you a seat in the group of death.
Which we couldn't agree on for some reason. Yeah.
They're all groups of death.
I thought that one was definitely a group of death. Which one is that?
E was the one I thought.
Yeah, E for you, but E was an easy decision for me. For me, it was...
Transform your home in 1 weekend and get big savings on everything for your project at Menards. Menards carries the largest selection of Purdy painting tools you need to get your painting project started. From brushes, paint, roller covers, and even paint kits. Hurry in and save big money on Purdy painting supplies. Get everything you need for your painting project at Menards. Plus, check out Menards.com for more great deals happening now.
Save big money.